Welcome to the Poem of the Week. Each week, our poems are intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark A. Bell. Gentlemen.
Thank you, Maggie. Hey, Mark, how are you?
Doing really well, thanks.
We're going to talk about my favorite little gland, the prostate gland, today.
I thought it was an organ, not a gland. Well, is it an organ or a gland?
I don't know, but I like
it's
it.
It's your favorite. Either way, it's your favorite.
I spent a lot of time, not personally, but professionally, thinking about this little gland or organ. Just by way of review, you got a great article for us from the New England Journal. Most prostate cancers, and you know, there's some confusion as to whether they're really all even typically called cancers, but they're not now diagnosed while they're clinically localized. This is perhaps based in part on the widespread use of the PSA, sometimes appropriate and sometimes inappropriate use. As we talk with our patients, treatment planning needs to incorporate a lot of information, the natural history of the disease, the risk of progression, and a reminder that many of these cancers are biologically indolent. That means that they may never threaten the health of the man or the life of the man. Others, unfortunately, are not indolent. So for patients who are diagnosed with this prostate cancer confined to the prostate, there are basically two options, or perhaps three options. There's radical prostatectomy, radiation therapy, and that can be either external beam or some type of brachytherapy, or for selected patients, perhaps at low risk, active surveillance. So lots of factors in choosing or helping a patient choose which of these different options. Some of these have to do with the disease characteristics, the patient's age, their life expectancy, the presence or absence of significant comorbidities, their values and preferences, particularly with regard to some of the side effects that you'll mention, and expected outcomes from the treatment. So we go through, we try to risk stratify, we try to have these discussions and help them to see that they're either in a low-risk range or perhaps a high-risk range. So the article that you've identified comes from the New England Journal of Medicine, published at the end of 2016, volume 375. And for those of you that are perhaps following along in the journal as we speak, it begins on page 1415. It attempts to answer the clinical question, what is the best approach to the management of localized prostate cancer? So it's going to help us sort of have that difficult conversation with patients. Mark, what did they find?
Yeah, this was a real landmark study and a very important study for not only urologists, but primary care physicians. And there were really two publications in the New England Journal. We're primarily going to talk about the treatment outcome part of it, but we'll, if we have time, we'll touch a little bit on the harms side of it as well. So this was a randomized trial. They took clinically localized prostate cancer patients. They were all screened for prostate cancer using a PSA. So it was screen-detected cancer, which is important. Of the 82,000 they screened, about 2,600 had a grade T1C or T2 cancer. They included men with any grade, any Gleason score, which is interesting, and we'll get to that later. A really large percentage, too, about two-thirds, over 1,600 men agreed to be randomized to one of three groups. And that's important because it means it's probably a pretty representative group of all men with PSA-detected prostate cancer. Three groups were radical prostatectomy, radiotherapy, generally external beam, and a program of active surveillance. So the active surveillance was a PSA test every 3 months in the first year and every 6 to 12 months after that. If there was a rise of 50% or more, it would trigger an evaluation for possible biopsy and, of course, treatment if indicated. In the active surveillance group, of course, there was a trickle of men every year that would go over from, maybe we should talk about a stream since this is prostate, but a trickle or a stream going from the active surveillance group into one of the treatment groups as they turned positive. It was 20% at year two, 40% at year five, and a bit more than 50% at year 10. So the glass half full side of that is that half of the men in active surveillance did not require treatment over 10 years of follow-up. There wasn't any difference between groups regarding mortality due to prostate cancer. and prostate cancer specific survival at 5 or 10 years, or all-cause mortality. So for the really important outcomes in terms of potential benefit, there was no difference between groups.
That's amazing. I mean, you know, specialists have spun this in so many different ways, and that's amazing that there was no difference in any of those three outcomes.
Yeah, and it was also, you know, so there was a downside. You know, whenever we talk about this topic and many screening topics, there's some good and some bad. The bad news was that in the active surveillance group, there was a somewhat greater likelihood of developing metastatic disease. There were 3 more metastatic cancers per 1,000 person years in active surveillance than in either of the treatment groups. That was significant, statistically significant. I would say probably clinically significant. When you think about person years, I conceptualize that as take 100 patients and follow them for 10 years. You'll have 3 additional cases of metastatic disease. Progression to more advanced disease, T3 or T4, urinary or rectal complications, or having to use androgen deprivation was also more common. If you lump together all of those progression outcomes, there were about 13 more patients for every 100 over 10 years that had disease progression. So what you get with active surveillance is a 50% chance of not requiring treatment at all, but you also have a slightly increased risk of metastatic disease, as well as of some other complications. I think an interesting part of it was that it really didn't matter. They stratified by PSA result, the initial PSA level and the Gleason score and the stage, and that didn't affect the results. So it was even with some of the higher Gleason scores that you still saw a reasonable outcome for active surveillance. So in terms of the harms, just briefly, they did find significantly more harms. The risk of erectile dysfunction was 50% in the surgery group. It was elevated in some of the other groups, but improved quickly, whereas it did not improve in the surgery group as much. So 50% versus less than 12%. The incontinence was greater in the surgery group as well, and it was greater in all 3 groups, actually, but it improved in the other 2 groups. It did not improve as much in the surgery group.
Wow. And you know, typically we're talking about 25 or 30% of patients who are incontinent, right? So it's not a small subgroup.
That's right. That's right. There were, you know, significant harms, even in the active surveillance group. And I think, you know, you may ask, well, why is that? They're not undergoing surgery that could be damaging the nerves, but they are undergoing, you know, repeated biopsies. There's emotional stress, you know, associated with this. So there may be other reasons why they're experiencing at least certainly the erectile dysfunction on a temporary basis with the active surveillance.
Yeah, very interesting study. You know, again, what listeners have to do is to try to figure out how to process this and have that conversation. The literature that talks about having these discussions reminds us that visual diagrams, repeated discussions, you know, talk back strategies where you explain something to someone and have them repeat back to you what they've understood are all very useful in terms of helping them to make a decision that is best for them.
Just one last point. I saw a study recently that was done out of the Detroit Medical Center, and they asked patients, they basically, you know, asked them, how long do you think you will live with this organ-confined, you know, prostate cancer, you know, basically the kind of cancer we're talking about here, if you aren't treated and if you just have surveillance, or if you are treated? And it was dramatic. The patients who were asked to estimate their prognosis with active surveillance said the majority thought they'd be dead in 5 years, whereas 90% thought they'd be alive at 10 years if they got treated. So I think there's a lot of misinformation out there that, you know, around this active surveillance and, you know, the potential benefits and the really very good outcomes that you can achieve.
To not have to go through radiation and surgery would be wonderful. And I've got a coin toss, a 50% chance of making it the rest of my life without ever having problems. But, you know, 13%, if I don't do anything, I'm going to have some sort of bad outcome. I'm not sure what I would do. It's a tough.
Yep.
Thanks, Mark. Talk to you again next week.
Talk to you soon. Yeah.
That's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to look at this and other recent poems, please go to www.infopoems.com. Please join us again next week for another medical poem.